Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And it's so good to have you here in Washington, D.C., Ken.
Well, I had to be in Washington because we have to celebrate the new frontrunner for the Republican presidential nomination.
Pour the champagne. Yeah. And the new frontrunner is, hold it, I got to go down the list, Rick Santorum.
Well, a week ago, I was looking at all these emails from the Romney campaign, and they were really hitting hard at Rick Santorum. Said, why are you spending all this time on Rick
Apparently,
Santorum?
Apparently, their political intelligence is better than we thought.
Well, it's probably better than their campaign apparatus.
They spend any money in those three states?
They did spend money in Colorado, but here's the thing.
They thought Colorado was in their back pocket,
right.
And which would be a Levi's back pocket. And they thought that, we won it 4 years ago. We won pretty easily 4 years ago. What's the difference between 2008 and 2012 with Mitt Romney in Colorado, Ken?
4 years.
No, although the math is right, which is kind of surprising in and of itself. The difference is 4 years ago, he was the conservative alternative to
John
McCain.
Right.
Now, everyone else is the conservative alternative to Mitt Romney. That's the difference.
As a matter of fact, this week, CPAC is having its conference in Washington. And 4 years ago at the CPAC conference, Mitt Romney announced he was pulling out of the race and the conservatives went ballistic.
No!
Right.
They shouted.
Now they say yes.
You know, it's possible he could end his candidacy at the CPAC convention again this year.
Well,
that'd be two in a row, wouldn't it?
Well, here's the thing, though, that Rick Santorum never benefited from the victory in Iowa. I mean, they declared it way after. He never had the momentum that anybody else would have.
He didn't fully benefit from it. He got a pretty good bounce out of the fact that he was a virtual tie. It was a virtual tie.
But a victory is much better than a tie.
Always better.
Look, yes, there were no delegates.
There were hardly any voters.
Yes.
There were hardly any voters. You know what there was? There was saturation coverage on cable television.
Right.
And that drove...
Now, we're talking about Colorado, Minnesota, and Missouri, right?
That's right. The three events this week, Missouri was a beauty contest primary.
Okay.
They'll still be choosing their delegates in March. And in Minnesota, you did have a process that could be perceived as instructing people who will eventually be delegates, but they didn't choose or bind any delegates
in
Minnesota.
But that's not the point.
And in Colorado, the same. Here's the point. In Iowa, it's the very first event.
Right.
And you get enough turnout so that it at least looks like it's some kind of reasonable amount of outpouring. And you've had the candidates there for months contesting. Whereas in Colorado and Minnesota, you had very little presence from the candidates. Little Ron Paul in Minnesota, a little bit of Santorum in Minnesota, but very little presence really in Colorado and Minnesota. Very little campaigning and tiny, tiny, tiny turnout. In Minnesota, something like 1.3% of the voting age population taking part. In Colorado, a little bit more. I think they said it was 6% of the Republicans. 6%?
Well, by definition, a caucus, it doesn't come anywhere
exactly
close
my
to a
point.
Primary.
Exactly
Look
my
at the turnout
point.
In Missouri, which didn't even count.
Which didn't even count, and because it was a primary, at least it was a little better.
Yeah, but a non-binding...
Well, but you don't have to go to somebody's house someplace. You don't have to go to some school at 7 o'clock at night. You can actually just go vote like a normal American.
That's always been the problem with the caucuses. My question, and I think this is feeding off what you just said, if the Republican Party is so energized about 2012, if in 2008 they were so dejected because they were unhappy about Bush and the economy and the war, now they're really riled up and can't wait to get rid of Obama, where is the turnout? Where is this anxiousness or this excitement about 2012?
I don't question that Republicans are eager to get rid of Obama. I don't question that they're riled up, and I don't question that they have a tremendous sense of needing to get the country back. They don't translate that into voting behavior in the sense of thinking, gee, if I just go down there on Tuesday or Tuesday night, go to the caucus, or I really extend myself to do this, the vast majority of Republicans just say, I'll vote against Obama in November. Or they think if there were a candidate out there that I really cared about, maybe I would go to vote for that person on Tuesday, or I'd go on Tuesday night to a caucus for that woman or man who really convinced me that they were going to beat Obama. But they don't see anyone in this field that they respond to.
You know something? The dynamic of this race seems to change all the time. And this is what really strikes me the most. Romney is cruising to the nomination. He's going to beat Obama. And then comes January 21st in South Carolina, where we say, oh, wow, we have a lot of doubts about Romney. Then comes January 31st in Florida, where Mitt Romney basically wins almost every demographic. He wins Nevada, too. And, of course, there's a reason why he wins Nevada more.
Nevada was not much of a contest.
No. Well, we thought Colorado wouldn't be either. But then we say, okay, Mitt Romney is once again.
Now, there's a huge difference between Nevada and Colorado.
Oh, no, no, I know that, but I'm just saying that a lot of people just said that, well, after Nevada, after Florida, the Republican ship has righted itself, mm-hmm. that Mitt Romney is on his way to basically run against Barack Obama for the general election. Mm-hmm. And then everything is fine, and then nobody mentions Rick Santorum's name. And now comes whatever Tuesday meant, but if nothing else, the doubts and the unease about Romney surface once again.
That's right. And there is doubt and there is unease. And as I was saying earlier, there's a lack of enthusiasm for him. People are not going to turn out just to vote for him, for the chance to endorse him. They're going to wait and vote for whomever they need to vote for to beat Obama in November. That's the dominant sense that I get from Republicans this year. But the other thing we have to say about these Tuesday events, and Nevada as well, previous to that, is that Newt Gingrich disappeared. It was not long ago, after South Carolina, as you say, that suddenly Newt Gingrich was the flavor. And everybody was talking about how, you know, gosh, he could do this, he could do that, he could do this. He could unify all the anti-Romney vote. And even if people don't like him, they want a more conservative figure so that he will be the anti-Romney and he could be the nominee.
Two-person race, he said, if over and over again after South Carolina, if the two-person race, should Rick Santorum drop out? Well, of course he should, because I am the alternative to Mitt Romney. Where was Newt Gingrich? Of course, Newt Gingrich was campaigning in Ohio, which holds its primary March 6th. But again, if the inevitability of Mitt Romney has been stalled because of what happened last Tuesday, whether Tuesday matters or not, I think perception matters. And whether, you know, whether there were so many delegates chosen on Tuesday in Colorado, Minnesota, Missouri or not, perception matters. So if the race does go on, if there are more and more doubts, it's not so bad for Newt Gingrich to be in Ohio, albeit it's not for another, you know, until March 6th. Of course, you also have Tennessee and Georgia on March 6th, which could be
good. Oklahoma,
which could
ought to be good ground for Gingrich. No question that he can make a comeback on Super Tuesday, but the interesting thing is that given the very, very small list of events in February,
right.
he basically got shut out. There were four and these three on this week, and he got nothing. Not only did he not win any of them, I don't believe he was in second place in any
of them. No, he wasn't. He wasn't. Although
he was tied for second in Nevada. I think he and Ron Paul pretty much split second place in Nevada. But apart from that, he was no longer the alternative candidate. And not that this is dispositive or all that serious, but he has fallen in the national polls of Republicans rather dramatically. He was for a while out front. He was literally the leader. Even at the point where he was losing Florida, he was the national leader among Republicans as their choice for their nominee. And now it isn't even close. It's Romney across the board, and the rising figure there is Santorum.
And what's also odd to me is that the people describing why Gingrich didn't do so well is that, well, you know, he doesn't have that much money. He doesn't have organization. What money and organization does
Rick Santorum
have?
None. Absolutely none. In fact, his people were trumpeting the fact that on the day after he did so well in those Tuesday events, they raised $250,000. $250,000 is what people raised to buy a house.
Yeah, or lunch.
It's not what you raise to run for president.
Exactly right. It,
an impressive amount of money running for president is not even a million or 5 million. It's tens of millions.
Okay, and again, we don't have to talk about why Romney lost or what happened, but comparing to 2008, but Romney, who won Minnesota in 2008, finished third in Minnesota.
One reason I think Ron Paul did particularly well in Minnesota was
but nowhere else.
He went there.
Yeah,
he went
yeah.
there. He was at Bethel University. He was here and there in the cities. He was out into the small towns. He really went after Minnesota. And Minnesotans are proud, just like Iowans and lots of other people. They relate to their political events as, in some senses, a show of respect to themselves vis-a-vis other Republican parties around the country. And Ron Paul really came and really asked for their vote. And he got, I think, in the end, about 20% of their vote. And that's, you know, that's a respect vote.
But I think that Paul is doing well in my mind. And you know about my mind.
I have been there and
exactly.
needed to get out soon.
Quickly. Ron Paul is not doing as well as I thought. I always thought that his organization was going to be stronger in 2012. I thought his key to him doing well in 2012 was going to be come in the caucuses. And he was competitive in Minnesota. He finished second. But, I mean, he's well behind in all these contests. And he's basically where Rick Santorum was a couple of weeks ago where nobody was talking about
him. The tough thing for him, too, is that proportionality was supposed to fuel his importance.
Right.
He was supposed to be getting a share everywhere we went. He was going to be getting a share of this delegate pile, a share there. And that by April 1st, when we started seeing many more winner-take-all events, which would presumably shut him out, he would have a stash. He would have 50, 60, maybe even 100 delegates so that he would be going to Tampa with what could be conceivably the balance of power. Now, we're still not to the point where we really believe we're going to get to Tampa and a brokered convention, nothing like that.
No.
But the key number here, the magic number, is 1,144.
Right.
That's what you need. That is not a huge number. It's not as big as the number at the Democratic convention where they have so many more delegates. If you had 100 delegates, and if there were a competitive convention, let's just call it a competitive convention, Ron Paul could be important enough to make some changes in the platform and to get himself a much more featured position than he's ever had before at a convention.
I think the latter is more important. I don't think there's going to be any battle for the nomination come the Tampa convention.
Okay, you say there's not going to be a battle in Tampa, and I agree with you. But what about this just possibility that when we get to Super Tuesday and we have states scattered around the country, Romney wins some, okay, he gets Massachusetts, he's going to win in Vermont because it's just him and Ron Paul on the ballot, the others didn't get on. He's going to be competitive in Ohio, but there's going to be a fight for Ohio. And in the southern states, Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum will probably prevail. I'm guessing at this point it's still Gingrich unless he truly collapses between now and March 6th. But it's possible that Super Tuesday distributes delegates all over the place. And that when we get into the April and May events, there's enough of a split in the states that somebody other than Mitt, and maybe it's going to be Rick Santorum now and not Newt if he continues to spiral downward, somebody's going to stay in this fight.
Yeah, or by Santorum doing so well on Tuesday and getting the media's attention finally this week, perhaps maybe in Super Tuesday, Gingrich and Santorum battle and split the conservative votes and Romney benefits, which is what the scenario for the Romney campaign was all along.
That's right. Either that or that by now, even by now, weeks ahead of Super Tuesday, one or the two of those guys would have been driven out.
And we don't. We're also ignoring what happens on February 28th in Arizona and Michigan. Now, we think
28 points in Arizona for Romney. Michigan's his home state.
He was big, but he was big up. He was up big in Colorado as well and lost.
It's different because he's really going to contest Arizona.
Yeah.
They made the mistake, and clearly I think they've acknowledged that it was a mistake, that they thought Colorado was iced. It wasn't, and now they will not make that mistake in Arizona, and they won't make that mistake in Michigan, where Rick Santorum has a shot. I don't see Newt Gingrich doing anything in Michigan, but Santorum's got that appeal to anti-abortion activists. They are tremendously energized right now, partly because of the Obama administration's decision about insurance companies, or rather insurance programs covering contraceptives and even religious institutions having to provide that. Hugely controversial decision, even in the Democratic Party. Santorum's feeding off that energy. In Michigan, the anti-abortion movement is tremendous. It's one of the strongest elements of the Republican Party there. He could get that vote in Michigan, but it's still not going to be enough to beat Romney.
You know something? I don't think I want to predict anymore. I don't think there's any reason for us to predict anymore, because if you asked me a week ago, I said, even though we know that it was not for a lot of marbles last Tuesday, but Colorado was safely for Mitt Romney, just like Nevada was safely for Mitt Romney. And as it turned out, it wasn't. So who knows what's going to happen, except there's no events going on until February 28th and no debate until February 22nd.
Will that debate actually happen? Ken Rudin, I put it to you. Predict.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Good. See, now you're predicting.
Right.
You're sure. You're absolutely certain.
Ask me about the Super Bowl.
How about that Super Bowl?
I predict the Patriots win. Oh, wait a second. The Giants won. That was so great.
This is all coming out.
No,
this part about football.
You know why it's not?
This is absolutely.
You know why
coming
it's not?
Out.
Because I want to talk about the Chrysler ad. That's why the Super Bowl stuff stays in.
Okay. Ken, how about that Chrysler ad?
The Chrysler ad. Everybody made such a big stink over this commercial as if it's an endorsement of the Obama.
Which, of course, Clint Eastwood denied.
Well, Clint Eastwood wouldn't be there to endorse it. He was there to say, look, I believe in America, and I think America is coming back, which sounds like an optimistic message, not I endorse the Obama stimulus program.
Right. It certainly doesn't
endorse. And the bailouts.
It certainly. Well, but there is an implicit.
Yes.
Because
yes,
you're
yeah.
talking Chrysler.
Chrysler.
You implicitly think that that was a worthy thing to have saved, the Chrysler company, the American auto industry. And Clint Eastwood is, of course, classically associated with things American and even for that matter with classic American cars. And so for him to come out and make that endorsement, it's so powerful at a subliminal level that he doesn't have to say Obama. He doesn't have to have any kind of, you know, tiny little hint that he's talking about the current administration getting any credit for any of this. Just the fact that he's positive about certain elements of our economy, which have been supported by the Obama administration, is going to get everybody talking about how it's a political ad.
Right, right. There's another commercial during the Super Bowl, actually, which got a lot of attention, even though it was only seen in Michigan.
Well, then it was shown everywhere else, and people pulled it up on YouTube.
And this is Pete Huckstra, the former congressman. Now, he was a former, I think he was a former chair of the Intelligence Committee.
Yes, he was.
And there's not much intelligence in this commercial, I didn't think.
Well, maybe it depends.
Because everybody's, look, the fact that we're talking about Pete Huckstra is something, but...
Well, let's make it clear why this is a little controversial. Let's listen to a little bit of it.
Your economy get very weak. Ours get very good. We take your jobs. Thank you, Debbie Spend It Now.
I think this race for U.S. Senate is between Debbie Spend It Now and Pete Spend It Not.
And even Republicans were pretty aghast at this ad. You're having this Asian woman speak in broken English as part of a stereotype of how...
My guess is if we could find the actress who they used in that political ad, she probably does not speak English that way. But at any rate, the point is xenophobia. The point is anti-Asian. The point is your job is going to Asia and it's the Democrats' fault.
That message is there, and I think Democrats did it against Bush, you know, when Bush was president. I think just having this woman, this actress in broken English to do the stereotypical Chinese woman saying, you know,
thank you, America.
Yeah, I can't even talk about it. I just mm-hmm.
Okay, and then he goes on to talk about his opponent as Democratic Senator Debbie Spend It Now.
Right.
And of course her name is Stabenow. And he's making the point that he's a low spending, anti government, low tax Republican, and so on.
Not gonna increase the debt and let China own our country.
That's right.
That's fine. Again, the message didn't bother me as much as the way they presented the commercial.
Where is Hoekstra in this contest? Is he going to get the Republican nomination?
He was considered the favorite against Clark Durant, who's a longtime Republican fixture there. There's an August primary. Look, this has got Hoekstra has not backed down from this ad at all. A lot of Republicans said this is abhorrent, but it certainly got Hoekstra more. Not that he needed that much attention. He ran for governor in 2010, lost the primary, but people know who he is. But this just seemed wrong. By the way, one more Super Bowl note. Harry Carson, the great linebacker from the 1987 Super Bowl Giants, may be the Democratic nominee for Congress in New Jersey against Scott Garrett. And speaking of Super Bowl, there are Super PACs in the news this week, and President Obama's evolving position on that.
Yes, well, he, of course, was against Super PACs and against Citizens United as a decision that has made these possible.
I'm sure he's still against
the Supreme Court, and I'm sure he would say he's still against it. But if they're going to exist, you know, if people are now bringing machine guns to the gunfight that was previously a knife fight, he wants a machine gun, too.
Ooh, you sound like Jay Carney defending the White House.
Well, but that's his view. I mean, that's his position. But, of course, it's a reversal of his earlier position, which was a very high-minded denunciation of money in politics. But he's the incumbent president. He can raise money by whatever means are legal, and he can raise money by whatever means he decides are necessary. And, of course, the viewpoint of the Democrats is when you've got Karl Rove out there with American Crossroads and you've got the Koch brothers and you've got limitless supplies of anti-Obama money coming in through super PACs, why shouldn't the president be able to defend himself?
Well, you could also make the case that the Republican Party needed all these super PACs because the Obama campaign was talking about raising $1 billion and they couldn't have competed without these super PACs. The thing is,
do you think that they would have stepped back from having super PACs if the president had decided not to run for re-election and there was no incumbent Democratic president?
Of course not. But the thing is, for those who believed in the Obama rhetoric of 2008, that I will take public money, I will not opt out of the public money system.
So as not to have the limits on separate money. Private money.
I will not allow lobbyists to contribute to my campaign, and I think the super PACs are bad. This, at the minimum, it seems to be a reversal.
Well, it is a reversal. There's no question it's a reversal. The question is, you know, how much you think it is forced upon him by the changing rules of the game and how much you think he's just cynically promising that he's going to be better than the average bear and then deciding to be worse than the average bear.
Well, all I know is that the argument to how awful it was for super PACs to be in politics and how awful it was for the Republicans to be utilizing this, that argument disappears from the Democratic arsenal.
Okay. Super PACs, Super Bowl, Super Tuesday. But what I wanted to get back to that you were talking about earlier was this ad.
Thank you, Michigan Senator Debbie Spend It Now.
So Pete Hoekstra would like to get back into Congress, but not everyone who's been there wants to go back.
Well, this is one thing that's not a surprise at all, and that's Bob Kerry in Nebraska.
Surprise.
He's been with the new school how long, Ron?
Since it was the old school.
Exactly right. And he's been in New York all these years, and the Democrats said, well, Ben Nelson, a true Democrat.
A true Nebraskan.
Yeah.
Well, he's unicameral and unipartisan.
He is. I'd walk a mile for a unicameral.
You know, that's the Nebraska tradition.
Right. And so Bob Kerry, who hasn't run for office, I think, since 1988.
Oh, and then he ran for president, though, in 1992.
And he won?
No.
No, but he went windsailing, didn't he?
No, that was John Kerry.
Oh, different Kerry.
No, he went Deborah Winger.
And after two Wingers, I hang up.
I understand. So
so it looks like the Democrats are not going to really seriously contest the seat. I'm sure they'll come up with a candidate. I can't imagine.
Unless they can get Warren Buffett to run.
And there is
his secretary.
Right, they will make the same amount of money. But the Republicans have a pretty nasty primary going on. That could matter. I don't think the Democrats have a shot at this seat.
No. And now, we're not talking about the Senate now, but Erskine Bowles, who a lot of North Carolinians thought would step back into the political arena and run for governor there because their current incumbent
Purdue
has decided not to run for another term, he has also stepped back and said, don't need it.
Well, first of all, he's not the greatest campaigner.
Hasn't won the two times he's run.
For the Senate against Burr and Elizabeth Dole and Burr and Hamilton, I think.
That's right, and they didn't get along, and that was quite a contentious primary.
So Erskine Bowles is not going to run for governor, but there are a lot of folks dropping out of the contest in North Carolina. Earlier, we had Heath Shuler, the congressman, saying he's not going to run. And also, Brad Miller is not running for re-election.
Although he might run for governor. But look, I mean, the Democrats are really kind of flailing here.
This week, Sue Myrick.
A Republican.
Not running for re-election.
From Charlotte,
right.
Previous mayor of
That's
Charlotte.
Correct.
And she has announced she's not running. But now, she's had a full career. This is not just a matter of redistricting or worrying about political exigencies. She's had a full career, and she's ready to retire.
And so we bid Sue Myrick a fond adieu.
Bye-bye, Sue. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. Hey, hey, what?